Hey, welcome to the Push Pull Sales and Marketing Podcast. I'm Marcella.
And I'm Sherry. And each episode will provide you with sales and marketing strategies that you can implement immediately into your own business. Today, we're going to be talking about what your customer won't say to you. But real quick, our sponsor for this episode is the Grant Cardone Core MP3 package, which Marcella's a fan of himself.
Absolutely. So I actually first heard of Grant Cardone. I saw his book at the library, and this is one of the first books that comes in this bundle. So it comes with four books. It's called If You're Not First, You're Last. So if anyone who watched, Talladega Nights?
Yeah.
It came out right around that time. It was a New York Times bestseller. It includes that book. It's a great sales book. The 10X Rule, that's a great book on basically doing the most with your time and how people underestimate how much effort is required. Seller Be Sold, and also the Closer's Survival Guide. So in terms of all four books, it's a really, really good package. You get all four, and the website or the link to that, and I love how Sherry says it.
If you go to pushpullsales.com/GCMP3. Grant Cardone MP3. So we'll include it in the show notes for this episode as well, which again is what your customer won't say, what they're not telling you. So are you trying to say, Marcello, that your customers or your potential customers are not always upfront and completely honest with you? Maybe consciously. or unconsciously, maybe.
Absolutely. So no, and here's the thing, a lot of times people think that salespeople are the slimy ones and they're the ones who are really dishonest, and sometimes salespeople put customers in a position where they're not going to be honest. And one thing that's interesting, we had taken some personality assessments, and one of the core skill sets that's on something that's a little bit more sales specific for finding the right salespeople was level of skepticism, because a lot of personality things will look for optimism, they'll look for social confidence, they'll look for goal setting, ability to communicate. But skepticism was also a key skill set that was looking to be measured.
I think you have a healthy dose of skepticism.
Yes, and I definitely developed that. So when I first started in sales in the home improvement, I remember one of the first things people said is buyers are liars, and they tell stories of how people are lied to by rabbis, people are lied to by pastors, and people are lied to by pretty much anybody. So one of the main things you'll hear a customer won't always flat out say, unless they're coached or unless there's that level of rapport and trust, is just a flat out no. So how often have you run into this where someone say, yeah, we'll go ahead and we'll get that order for you and we'll get that taken care of, or hey, or this is my favorite one, and this isn't necessarily a sales thing. How often do you run into someone you haven't seen in a long time and like, yeah,
we should get together sometime.
And you're like, totally. And yeah. In your head, you're like, I never want to see you again. Or no, that is absolutely not going to happen.
Now, to be fair, there are plenty of times where I do mean that.
Well, yeah.
But there's also plenty of times where that's just the thing to say because you feel like that's a nice thing to say. I'm bad with saying no. You know, I would rather give a maybe or maybe later or
maybe
let me think about it some more. But yeah, flat out, you know, and that answer can be more respectful for everybody's time. You know, that of course, whether it's in life or in the career path, you know, in sales, no, if you know that this is not the right thing, saying no is helpful for all parties.
Yeah, and it's a natural reaction because you don't want to hurt the sales rep's feeling. I'll give you an example. When we were looking at different preschools, and you were not happy at all. So coming off this, I can't believe this. They changed where this was. They changed. That's not what I signed up for. Now they're showing me some a different room and stuff like that. You were not happy coming into it. And then you meet the lady, and you were so nice to her.
I
was like, why couldn't you just flat out said, like, no, we don't want to do this. This isn't what we signed up for. This isn't why I gave this. This isn't what we put a deposit on. You change the facility. You change the curriculum. I can't be mean
to people.
You cannot be mean to people. And most customers won't do that. And another side story, real quick. I ran to a customer, mm-hmm. And I proposed another service that we can do. And he's like, well, I don't really want to do that, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, hey, it's my job to ask. And he says, well, no, never hurt anybody. And I said, that's my second favorite answer. And he looked at me really puzzled. He said, what's your least favorite answer? Maybe. Maybe is my least favorite answer, because maybe can legitimately mean maybe I need more information. But right. 9 times out of 10, maybe means no.
Right.
So most times customers will not flat out say no, and I'm guilty of that. I'm guilty of that myself until you pry. I had that I went to Meineke or something like that, and he told mm-hmm. me like everything was wrong with my tires or everything was wrong with the brakes, and then he's like, yeah, we can get that fixed for you. We can set up an appointment.
You're like, yeah, maybe later. I'll call back in.
I'm like, sure, yeah, sounds good. He's like, all right, well, I can order the parts now. And then I was like,
no.
All right, well, actually, no, which translates well into some of the other things. We'll cover that in a little bit, and one of them is I don't trust you.
Yeah.
But the next one we had on the list is customers or a prospect will not flat out tell you
if they're not the decision maker.
Why do people do that?
Well, it makes them look worse. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't want to be in a position where they're flat out admitting that they might not have the power or authority to make this decision.
It's ego.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And especially if up until that point they were presenting themselves as a person that could make this decision, and then all of a sudden when it comes down to the wire, you know, that maybe might be coming from, well, I need to translate all of this to my boss when or a partner or whatever who might be making these particular decisions in that instance. And you needed to know that ahead of time. You know, that's why doing that research ahead of time, as you always talk about, comes in handy. But they're not going to flat out say, probably a lot of times you're the one that has more experience with it, but they're not going to flat out say, I'm not the decision maker. What do they say? I mean, I need to think about it, or I need to discuss with,
I need to bring this up with my team. I pass this along to my supervisor, something like that. A lot of times you'll get that toward the end. And that mainly is because the salesperson might have asked some pointed and some very, very direct questions. Like when I first call, like, hey, I'd like to speak with the person who handles marketing. And the person who maybe does the marketing, maybe the person who handles the email campaigns and stuff like that, is the person who would utilize the product, but isn't the person who would pay for it or right. who would give the right. rubber stamp of authority. So
that's on the salesperson to make sure they're asking the right questions to get the actual answer that they need.
And my favorite question to get around that without being intrusive, because most people will say, no, I'm not the decision maker. They're not going to say that.
Right.
My way to ask that question politely is to be like, well, let me go ahead and ask you this. If you were to make a change, mm-hmm. Who would possibly be upset about this, or who would not maybe like this?
Who would want to say in this, or who would want to?
I don't necessarily go into who would want to say in this, or
just like if you made this decision, who would be upset about it, or
who would be upset about it? And a lot of times, and that's if you have like a feeling, because most salespeople are trained to say, who else would like this project, who else would be a key decision maker. I might make that a follow up question in a couple things, but first I'll ask that. And I'll say who else is an influencer or who else is involved. And then you realize like what the actual impact is. Because sometimes I say, oh, well, Steve doesn't like change. And, you know, he's the one who's going to have to he's the one that's going to have to use this system. And, you know, well, my finance guy budgets are really tight and stuff like that. So, yeah, a lot of times they're not going to say I'm not the decision maker. There's a great book. I think it's called Smart Selling Online and on the Phone by Jenna. We've referenced her before. Josiane Fayot or Fagan, I never say her name right, I'm sorry. And she actually gives you specific phrases and specific mm-hmm. emails that will come from people that are not the decision maker. So where they use a similar verbiage and a similar pattern. Well, we have some other initiatives and we're doing that and stuff like that. A lot of times there are some telltale signs that you're not talking to the actual decision maker. So that is another one. A lot of times people won't flat out say, well, nope, I'm not the decision maker. Next on the list of things customers will never say or almost never say.
They're not going to admit that they're using you as leverage. So if you're you know, I am the client and I'm trying to gather pricing from five different people to kind of use them against each other. Or maybe I'm really, I'm loyal to the people that I'm already using, but I need a couple lower quotes to come in so that I can continue using the same company I'm comfortable with. I just need proof that they could go a tiny bit lower. You know, they're not going to tell you that they don't have plans to work with you. They're not going to tell you that they're trying to use you as leverage.
Oh, absolutely. We've only dealt with, I mean, yeah, no one's going to flat say, well, I had no intention of using you. I'm just using the leverage. You're 100% right. Maybe only one client has ever done that. And they were like honest to, it was definitely honest to a fault. Like, well, I'm going to go behind your back and I'm going to try to go directly to your source and get a better price. And that's the reason why I ask who your source is. yeah. So there are very, very, very few people like that. And you definitely remember that. So, as an example, and I learned this fairly early on because I didn't run into this until I got into transportation sales, where people would leverage pricing and stuff like that. So what we would say, and that was more of a preemptive thing, so we talk about before, one of my favorite things is their favorite quotes is when I learned when I was wrestling, you know, they say, well, how do you get out of a double arm bar? Don't get put into it. So you flat out say, look, if everything makes sense, if the numbers look good, I'm going to ask you, just give it a shot. Don't use my company as leverage. If this, and you tell you that early on, at the end, it's going to be very hard for them to say, well, actually, that's exactly what I was going to do. And then you put a little bit more heart and soul and say, hey, here's what happens. Some of the customers will do that, and then they're not happy, and they try to salvage a relationship. You can give different stories. You can give different feedback. But the best way, if that is something that's more unique to your industry where customers will do that, mm-hmm. you definitely want to address that up front. Certain things like insurance where it's regulated, where the insurance quote I get from, you know, Geisinger or whoever is going to be the same for me or someone else, it doesn't apply to there. But for most things where you're in a bid situation, the client won't flat out say that, well, look, I already have someone who I like and I'm just trying to get a better price out of him. Another one that customers won't always tell you in terms of getting leverage is I'm lying. I didn't actually get a better price. I said you were too high and that was a gut reaction. I asked, can you do any better? So you'll hear that a lot. If you're going to a yard sales or garage sales, I love when people are like, well, would you take five? Can you do any better? You know, and they're not going to flat out say, well, actually, I'd be willing to pay full price. So yeah, they're not going to flat out say I didn't actually get a better price. And I actually recently had that with, I had a new sales rep. And, you know, I was like, oh, well, that person's lying, actually. So, like, well, how do you know? I was like, well, if that person had a better price from the beginning, and you hit basically a minimum charge, they wouldn't be asking all these questions to tell you that they got a better rate by like $4 or $5 somewhere else. It's just trying to squeeze things out of you. And a lot of times salespeople condition customers because if they ask for a price concession, they normally give it to them and say, oh, I got a better price here. Other sales reps might not say, well, hey, that's not apples to apples. That's not necessarily what we're looking at. Can I see the other quote? Maybe something's not included. And then you call people out. And I will admit, I did this. I feel terrible about it now. I did this to a tile guy. I was like, well, you know, I got a better quote from someone.
To a what?
It was for what you call the rock in the kitchen.
A tile guy?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, so like a granite and tile guy. I told him I got a better quote, but it was from someone who's a little bit further away. I'd like to do business with someone local. Can you do any better? And he did. He wasn't like, well, you know, you're going to have to drive an hour to go get the piece or something like that. So we're talking about an actual, whatever it is,
it's countertop. It's a piece of granite for the countertop.
Yes. Yeah. So whatever it is. But I will admit now, if this person ever listens to this podcast, I lied to you. I did not get a better price somewhere else, but I knew you'd give me a better price. I give you credit for not going down that much, but you still caved.
Something else that a customer or someone, you know, you're meeting with, they're not going to tell you that they don't like you, that they don't trust you, that, you know, something feels off. You know, you must be really unlikable or really have rubbed them the wrong way if they're going to come out and say it flat out.
Oh, absolutely. Very, very rarely has anyone ever said, I don't like you or anything like that. Sometimes customers will say, when you call back and say, I'm sorry, we got disconnected. No, we didn't get disconnected. I hung up on you. Some people will lie at that point, and they'll say, well, oh, I'm sorry about that, because they kind of feel bad. But for the most part, people won't say, I don't like you, or I don't trust you, because you don't want to hurt someone's feelings. Mm-hmm. And from a sales rep's standpoint, and for most people's standpoint, you want to see yourself in the best light. So it's very hard to admit that maybe I rubbed this guy the wrong way. Maybe it's something that might be outside of your control. Maybe he reminded you of, like, his stepdad who beat him as a kid. I'm giving a very extreme example here.
It's a very extreme example.
It pretty much could be anything. I had that happen recently. So I was with a sales rep on the road. He knew this guy from a previous life, and I knew this prospect mildly. And I remember my interactions with the client, and I remember what he was saying when he was working with him. And when we met with him, it was both of us. He responded how he normally responded to me, you know. And then when the sales rep went to go see him,
which was bad.
Yeah, but it was very, very cold, very, very short. And I was like, this is the guy you said, like, you have a relationship with, blah, blah, blah. I was like, he must not like me. Sure enough, he goes to see the guy again, sees him on his own. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, you were right. He, for some reason, he doesn't like you. I am self-aware enough to know that I might rub some people the wrong way. And that's okay. You definitely can't win all of them. But a lot of times, a client won't flat out say that, like, for some reason, I really don't like that guy.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things Kurt said, too. Also, clients won't say it. Also goes along with, I don't like the guy. It might be a reason why they don't like you. You have bad breath. You have BO, because that was what Kurt said is the number one, or one of the number one complaint. It's top five complaints about salespeople. It's probably aside from not listening.
What, that they smell?
Yes. Yes, huh. Odors and stuff like that. So coffee breath or bad breath was one of the main things that people actually complained about. So another way to get around that.
Yeah, you mentioned the other – Paul was saying that, you know, Paul Smith, the sell with the story guy, that his interview will be coming out soon here on the podcast, and it's going to be a really good one. So listen for that in the next couple weeks. But – he was also mentioning that too. You know, he interviewed people who have to listen to these sales pitches over and over, and they said they can always tell when the conversation ends and the sales pitch starts. And they hate more than anything if, you know, they kind of turn into the salesperson right in front of their eyes, and they start asking cheesy questions, and they, even the tone of their voice changes a little bit. You know, so it's like those kind of things that, like, this might be your rehearsed thing that you're used to doing, but it really might be annoying people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's where it helps to have that third-party touch, where you have someone follow up. It could be a survey. It could be someone else. So I like now that there are a lot of things where, like, hey, you recently had your car serviced by this. We're a third-party, whatever, survey company. Tell me about your experience. And a lot of times people will tell their actual experience when it's not directly to the person's face.
Yeah.
Having a manager follow up, and I remember...
right, because you don't want to get them in trouble or get them fired or give them a bad mark, unless you really, really, really didn't like them. But probably more often than not, third party is a much better way to get that actual objective feedback.
And it could be a manager. I remember I was in a sales meeting. This was for the home improvement company, and he was going through, like, the sales staff. So I called your people, and this is what they said. One, someone showed up without a shirt and tie. It just was a regular shirt. I'm like, well, I've never done that. That's what you're talking. You always wear, like, a tie. You always wear a shirt, stuff like that. Other one said that it sounded like a canned pitch. Client's not gonna say, like, wow, I can definitely tell that was a canned sales pitch. Oh boy, I have
to your face.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, or I don't like the way you're questioning me or something like that. Like, and you can tell, like, something like it could all be in tone too. It's about, yeah, you know, if you have a good actor who can read lines good, can read the exact same lines as someone who's never ever acted before, and it just sounds terrible. So for example, one of the new sales questions is, what keeps you up at night?
Right.
You know, and sometimes that could sound like a sales pitch or something like that. And people have heard that. They've become accustomed to that, and they really, really tune people off. So what are some other things that clients or prospects will never say?
They, similar to, you know, not being the decision maker and the ego comes in, you know, if you're talking to a business owner, he's not going to admit to you that, you know, business isn't doing as well, or that he might not actually have the money for this particular thing right now.
Oh, that goes business owner, that goes, and that definitely goes
straight to consumer.
And that goes straight to consumer too. So we, yeah. Like, let's say you're in jewelry. Let's
I say knew you were going to say that.
I was going to do that one because you're right there. You're with your fiance, you're with your wife, you're with your girlfriend, and he shows you the most expensive thing possible. It's hard to be like, well, that's nice, but I kind of like this one here that's kind of in the $200 category. Yeah. I'm not really a $10,000 necklace kind of guy.
Yeah.
She's not really a $10,000
necklace
kind of girl.
Although I have said that before, where like they're like, how about this? And I was like, well, I have two little boys, and I can't have that expensive of a piece of jewelry that has potential to be destroyed
at any moment. You're very good about a lot of things. You're very good about that. So, but certain things like, I'll give you an example, like, in terms of budget or something like that, it's hard to be like, well, I'm waiting on this, or, hey, I have this mm-hmm. bill coming up, or I can't really afford that. 'Cause it's easy when it's just, and I'm using this word a lot. It's more like in the ether. It's more ethereal. Like, okay, so let's say, what would be a comfortable number for you? What number could you afford on a monthly basis? Like, what? And if you list 200, 400, or 600, someone might say, they might just by default pick them at 400. I said, really, is it 400? Like, then you clarify more. We would do this when we're selling home improvement products. Say, all right, 400 is comfortable. Like on a monthly basis, yeah, 400. We're like, all right, well, let's go ahead and let's say 400. I say, actually, no, let's do 200. When in their head, they're like, I barely have $50 at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
They're not gonna flat out say that, and especially when you give someone options. So a lot of times, salespeople who are trained to never really answer asking a yes or no question, similar won't be able to get a simple yes or no, or do you have the budget, because you're not asking those questions. You know, do you have a budget for this, or can you afford that? Because that's ego. No one wants to talk about that. Say, hey, I need this money for something.
So how
else
can you, since that is such, especially with the consumer market, you know, B2C, how can you phrase that question to get a realistic answer without offending somebody, or to ask the right questions so that they'll actually realistically answer it?
And some of that comes from getting, without even having to ask questions, getting intel, but also not prejudging. So when you get intel and you look at the customer, say, okay, well, let me ask you, what kind of car are you driving now? If you're selling a car, or okay, or what kind of jewelry do you normally wear? Mm-hmm. Where'd you get that from?
Mm-hmm.
And that helps narrow down what kind of market they're in. They say, well,
Walmart,
exactly. You don't want to prejudge, because maybe things have changed, and maybe they actually do want to spend a little bit more money. So that's okay. Well, why do you get it at Walmart? Well, because it's cheap, and you know, it's pretty simple. Okay, well, what brought you in here today?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sick of the cheap things breaking, and it's my wife's anniversary. I want to get her something really, really nice. Great. Did you have a figure in mind?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did. Great. Go ahead and triple that number. And yep, you see? And what'll happen for the most part is people will say what that triple that number is.
Funny.
So I've done that before.
I'm not paying 600.
Bam. I know your number is 200. A lot of times that'll happen. So I've done that with customers. This worked very well for the home improvement. Where I'd give the price, and then before I even tell you the price, whatever number you have in your head, go ahead and triple it. That let me know how much value I actually built into that. So sometimes, let's say my price was $10,000, and someone would say, it's $45,000 for windows. That's insane. I was like, oh, good. Well, I'm actually at $10,000. I might actually change my number. So asking questions around that, or really, really building the actual rapport, maybe being on the same level as the customer, and be like, look, I want something that you're going to be comfortable with. You know, what we need to do here is have something that you're going to be comfortable with. So if we look at realistic numbers or worst case scenario, and then you throw that out there, what would be a good number? And again, say, look, I'm not trying to pin you to that number and say that's going to be the final number. I might not even be able to get you to that number.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you're doing is you're taking pressure off the customer.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, well, maybe, okay, well, maybe you won't be able to come in that low or anything like that. And that's what they like to call tough terms, where you do the high numbers first.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you can't meet their numbers, so let's say they say, I like 100 a month or something like that. I say, okay, well, so it's 100 a month. I'm not sure I can even do that. And so, okay, yeah, definitely have to be $100 a month. I couldn't do more than 150.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can kind of work your way around that too, because sometimes customers will give that, and then you have to sell the value and really talk about the difference. If your product has a good ROI, let's say they're at 100 and you can save 200 a month and say, well, actually, I cost negative $100 a month.
Right.
So you can kind of run through that. So that is a question. or something customers will never say, or most normally never say, if you don't ask the right questions or you don't do the right intel. I don't have a money. Most people won't say that. They won't say I don't have a money. I don't have the money. I rubbed you the wrong way, mm-hmm. or you rubbed me the wrong way. That's another one. They won't say, well, you know what? I really pissed you off. you know, most customers will not say that. Another one I like too is no customer is going to say, well, I told you I'm just looking, but that's actually a gut reaction. It's just the way I've been taught, or I had a bad interaction with someone else, and this is just what I've been programmed to do. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, don't...
Like, every time you walk into a retail store, can I help you with anything today? Oh, I'm just looking.
Just looking.
And it's programmed into us.
And sometimes you are specifically looking for something, so you wander around and try to find it. Like, if you're looking for, I need to find this cable. I'm normally pretty good about that. I'll be like, yes, you, I need to find this. Help me find that. And I like to...
Yeah, but I mean, like, generally I'm just looking, so, but it's a program response, even for when I'm not just looking. It's just like the, you know, hi, how are you? You say, good.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Whether or not you're good.
And your dad is notorious for this, because I bet your dad runs through each and every one. I think my favorite is when I learned that, as before I really got into sales, that maybe is really no.
Yeah.
Hey, Tim,
my dad's whole side of the family.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Like, oh, hey, maybe one time I can, like, ride the motorcycle or something there. You can, like, teach me how to do that. And this is, like, his prized, one of his many prized possessions. He loved that thing. He's like, maybe. But he didn't even hesitate. He was like, maybe. It just was a boom. It was a canned response. Are there some things in this same vein that maybe a salesperson will never say, or will almost never say to a customer?
Hmm.
What about the opposite?
I mean, you kind of talked about it a little bit as far as, like, pricing. You keep stuff kind of tight to your chest sometimes.
Oh, that's... So that works both ways. So you're actually my least favorite customer. I hate working with you. you're always a pain in the butt. I know you're lying. Yeah. I like that one too. That one is so hard because there are situations where you definitely run into that.
I don't trust you. Where
I've had customers, and this is across the board. The worst case scenario was one customer. I asked them, like, they're like, oh, blah blah blah, came in with this pricing, and I was like, oh really? What kind of discount? He thought he put me on mute.
Oh no!
And he goes, hey, this guy wants to know what sort of discount those people are giving me. Should I tell him I don't know? Can't tell him I don't know. Yeah, hey Mark, I don't know. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. So a lot of times that's another one too. Customer won't admit, hey, I don't know, I don't understand. Mm-hmm. Sales reps won't say, I don't like working with you. I'm making a lot of money on your account. I'm not making any money on the account. Sometimes sales reps will say that. They'll say, I have no margin in this, yeah. I'm not making any money.
Or they don't have the power to change the pricing. They're not the decision maker on some of the things that the customer's asking. And that's where, like, you get back to, you should...
I really don't have a meeting this afternoon. I'm really not that busy. I do have time to talk to you. I just don't want to.
But, I mean, when it comes to those kind of things, when it's just like, you know... I'm going to save us both some time here and get out of here and pretend that I have a meeting this afternoon. I think that's different than trying to manipulate a customer. And I think that's where, you know, the difference is, of course, you need to be upfront and honest. If you don't have the power to quote that kind of pricing, you say, I'm going to have to get back to you after I discuss this with so-and-so. If I'm not saying you should go tell everybody who you don't, you know, that you don't like that particular customer, that's not going to be good for business if you just are upfront about those kind of things, that they're not your favorite client.
And that's why it's important to listen to this podcast along with to absorb as much information as possible. So you're in a position where those non-favorable customers, you don't have to worry about where you can basically fire those customers. Because a lot of times salespeople be like, oh, I hate this guy, but you know what? I need to hit my number and stuff like that. I don't like working with that guy. This guy's a pain in the butt of this business.
Nothing feels better than getting to the point where you can choose what clients you want to work with and choose which ones, you know, you're going to partner up with and then get rid of the ones that were weighing you down.
Oh, yeah. And that's one thing that we talk about, things that people will never say, like, I had a customer basically flat out lied and said, well, you know, oh, this person gave me a quote and told me it was this much, and then you guys won't honor that rate. I was like, all right, do you have a quote number? No, he just gave me a phone. He told me he wasn't going to put it in the system. I was like, I know this person. I've known this person for 6 years. He would never, ever do that. Or then it's like, oh, you raised the pricing, and then I complain, then he lowered the pricing, and they're like, actually, no, I didn't even touch your pricing. So that's definitely not true. We definitely never had that conversation. But yeah, so customers will not flat out say I'm lying to you, and there's a lot of things customers won't say. There's a lot of times salespeople put customers in positions where they pretty much have to lie. Some ways to get around that, and we talk about our sponsor. If you listen to a couple of the core MP3 package, again, can you say what the actual, I love the way you say it.
All right, so pushpullsales.com/GCMP3.
I feel like there could be like a techno song or something like that. You can do something.
We need that, you know, turned into something fancy. Humongous
what?
If any of you happen to watch H3H3, you will understand what we're talking about. Otherwise, just ignore Marcello.
Absolutely. All right, I think that wraps things up for the week.
Yep. Thank you to bensound.com for our intro and outro music. And thanks to you guys for listening. As always, like Marcello said, you can go check out the Grant Cardone Core MP3 package. We'll include that in the show notes, along with the other book that he referenced. On pushpullsales.com. You can find all the show notes there. We have a whole page full of resources for you guys that's books and courses that we recommend and have used ourselves and we've gotten a lot out of.
We can do like a hashtag too, have people like tweet us like hashtag like customers like never say or something like that.
Feel free to reach out to us. We're on Twitter at pushpullsales. We're on Instagram at pushpullsales. And yeah, reach out to us and let us know, you know, what your customers are not telling you, what they're not going to say, or if you're the customer, you know, what you would never tell a salesperson that's going on in your mind behind the scenes.
Cool.
Like I said, I think that wraps things up for this week. We're keeping it short. We both have colds and managed to make it through. I'm going to have to edit out a cough or two from Marcello. But luckily you guys won't have to, we won't subject you to that. But anyway, we will talk to you guys soon. And like I said, keep an ear out, an eye out. I don't know what it is in podcast land, for some upcoming interviews, with some great guests.
Cool. All right. See ya.
See ya.